Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream at that location. Or to any of your handheld devices, you can download TuneIn. TuneIn is a free app, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening, and you'll see the live stream button where you can click and stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program, and there you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is out there. Make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you to Time for Awakening Media, where you'll see more interesting content and blogs of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, author, lecturer, and professor of media and African-American studies at Morgan State University, Dr. Jared Ball, is back with us again. It's been a while since Dr. Ball has been on, but we're scheduled to have an interesting conversation with him tonight on the myth of black buying power. We'll be back to start the conversation with Dr. Ball after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
The before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Elliot?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, doing good. As a matter of fact, I'm really excited to have us in exchange with Dr. Ball, you know, Brother Jared, so that we can, you know, kind of expand and become, you know, more conscious, aware in this time of his understanding of the propagandizing of or the initial intent of the Buy Black campaign and how it came into being. I'm kind of excited about that.
You know, the last time we had Dr. Ball with us, he shared with us the mainstream media as a tool, propaganda tool, psychological warfare on black people. And tonight, we have Dr. Ball back with us to talk about his assertion of the myth of black buying power, again, as a propaganda tool by mass media to spread propaganda among the black community. And I want to welcome back to the program Dr. Jared Ball. How are you, sir?
I'm as good as could be expected. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm glad to have you back. It's been a while.
Yes, yes, and I hope you and your listeners are all at least as well as we could expect.
Dr. Ball, let's get right into it. You know, the last time you were here, you talked about the mainstream media as a propaganda tool, a psychological warfare on black people. And your assertion now, or what you're stating now, is that same mass media spreading the myth of black buying power. I want you to really go into this and explain to our listening audience what you mean in reference to this, because it's very interesting. I've seen several of the videos where you have talked about this with other folks on different venues where you have written about it. So go into it, because I want you to really expand on this.
Well, first, I just want to quickly say that just to clarify, it's not me who says that media are used to propagandize and engage in psychological warfare. It's the people who have themselves put together our media environment have in their own writing,
okay,
in their own definition and explanation, made clear that that's the purpose. And that's why we even see, again, renewed conversation around the relationship between mainstream news and psychological warfare and the role that CIA operatives and other so-called black ops play in relationship to what we are told is supposed to be news.
Okay.
So I just want to be clear, like, this isn't just me saying, you know, I'm not coming to some conclusion on my own. I'm just reporting And I think we can verify it just through our own experience and with the conclusions or the final product we deal with.
Oh, I listen. I understand clearly.
Anyway,
I understand, and I'm quite sure a lot of our listeners do. But yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
But I always like to remind people of that because a lot of us make this point about media, and a lot of people, in particular, I see it in my classroom. A lot of people are resistant to the idea that we're that easily manipulated. And I'm not saying that it is easy. I just think it's good to remind everybody as much as possible that those in power look from their own perspective to engage in mass manipulation of our public opinion and consciousness. Now, that said, this buying power piece is just one small segment of it. And it's actually an old mythology. And I haven't found the exact origins yet, but we know that many of well-meaning and even great people have, I think, misinterpreted this myth. And this goes back to people like Malcolm X, people like Dr. King, people like Claude Anderson today, historically the late, great Amos Wilson. I mean, many people have, I think, misunderstood the popular discussion and dissemination of these numbers, which initially come from business, from what I can tell so far, the business community trying to assess the best way to target various populations for the spending of their money. So when the concept of buying power in its modern iteration is developed, what we see is that when corporations and marketers work with one another and with research groups like Nielsen, and then ultimately for this myth in its modern iteration, the Selig Center for Economic Growth in the Bank of America Financial Center in Athens, Georgia, what they have done is said, from their perspective, how can we best help companies market to various segments of the population? So just like we see in media and the concept of narrowcasting, we see the same thing in marketing, where just like one entity, for instance, Disney and media, will own a variety of media outlets meant to target various segments of the community with a singular message, just splintered or filtered through different avenues. Same thing happens with marketing. So Disney will own ABC and give us a variety of programming that is meant to target various segments of the community based on age, race, gender, etc. We see them have ESPN for the sports fan and mostly male audience. We see them have cartoons for the mostly young and a variety of cartoons targeting a variety of different ethnicities and so-called racial groups, all with the same similar message of capitalism, of white supremacy, of conspicuous consumption, all filtered through a variety of different mechanisms. But the same thing happens with marketing. So they'll say, we want to find a way to target Black America with our products. So let's look at what Black people like to spend their money on. Let's find ways to manipulate Black people to spend their money with us. And then we will create this concept of buying power that, even though it is used for a variety of groups, they use it for LGBTQ communities, for millennials, for white males, white women, for Asians, for Native Americans, all these different groups have a buying power assessment, but only specific to African-descended or Black American people do we find that myth take a whole new weaponized, propagandized form that says, not only, A, do we claim you have this buying power, but then, unlike other communities, we will use this claim to suggest or outright state that you are only poor because you misspend and don't know how to save and don't know how to invest and you buy silly things like hair and rims, et cetera, and that's why you're poor. Then a lot of us, a lot of well-meaning people, will hear these numbers and they'll say, we have, as it is today, reported $1 trillion of buying power. We just need to use that money within our own communities and have that money stay within our own communities, and we can save and spend ourselves out of inequality and poverty. And that is just simply not true. So, A, I'll just stop here for a moment and say, A, the myth is that buying power means that this is actually how much money black people have, which is not what buying power means. And B, it suggests that we can overturn the inequality we suffer to this day if we just save and spend differently. And all of that is mythology to mislead people into thinking that people are poor because of their own choices and behavior, and that that there is no need for a revolutionary conflict for us to overturn the kinds of inequality that we still suffer and actually see getting worse.
Dr. Ball, before I pass the mic to Brother Richard, explain a little more this oxymoron to me of spending power when it relates to the African-American community. And I rarely hear it, if ever hear it, when it's talked about other communities. It's usually talk about the net worth or the net wealth of other communities. Well, when they talk about the spending power of black communities, how is that really explained when black communities, by and large, are poor?
Right. So one way you can hide the fact that black people only have at most 2% of the private wealth of the country, and that black people have decreasing rates of return relative to other communities in terms of what we get paid for our income, what our houses are worth once we buy it, and so on and so on and so on. The way you hide all of that and make people think that the inequality people suffer, black people suffer, is their own fault is to say, well, they have this $1 trillion in buying power, they just don't use it wisely. But most people, in fact, very few people that I've ever seen, and I actually haven't found anyone really, which is one of the reasons this has become my own pet peeve. One of the things that ends up happening is that very few people who report on this number actually look into the origins of the number itself. They don't find the methodology put into concluding this number. They don't find the original source. So they just repeat and regurgitate what other people have said. And that's why I'm saying, if I encourage people to not take my word for this, just keep clicking. Every time you see a story about buying power, you're going to find that it relates back to two and really one ultimate source. One is the Nielsen set of surveys, which are used to survey how black people spend their money, and then they reach wildly inaccurate conclusions about how much money black people have, or they produce reports that are misinterpreted, I should say. Because actually Nielsen and the Selig Center, the other group who produces really the numbers most people respond to, they don't actually claim that what people interpret it to mean. So in some level, they're not fully guilty. In other words, they never say black people have $1 trillion and are only poor because they spend poorly. What they say is, in fact, true. These numbers are not about wealth. These are not about income. These are not about what people are actually worth or own. Buying power is a phrase that is developed and used to determine how much people can spend on one group's products based on money that is available to them and based on goods that are available to them. One simple way of putting this is that when I bought my last car, I went and got a loan, like most of us do, for the car. So the car, I don't know, $30,000+ for the car. I did not have $30,000 in my bank account. I did not have $30,000 cash. I also did not have the ability to get a loan from someone else for $30,000 to start a business or buy stock or buy land or buy or invest in something that would become an appreciating asset. I was able to get $30,000 from a bank that was willing only to give it to me based on my agreement to buy this car. That number is added to this buying power, this purchasing power number, which suggests black people spend X amount of millions of dollars a year on cars. Well, of course we do, but that doesn't mean that we have millions of dollars that we could instead spend on land, stock, et cetera. So this is sort of what we buy on credit. We buy in small increments what we can afford. We buy what is sold to us. In other words, if five white people in this country own more land than the rest of us combined, that means that there is no big purchasing. There's not a lot of land for us to buy, even if we decided we were going to pool our resources and use our resources to buy land and turn that into profit and producing or wealth producing business, et cetera, and so forth. We don't have that. We can't buy stock because most of the stock is owned by a handful of people. So the idea that we could then buy up a whole bunch of stock and somehow overturn our individual or collective poverty is similar mythology. But ultimately the bottom line is this: Black people don't have any money. Black people don't have the access to the kind of wealth producing capabilities that would overturn the kind of inequality we have. And then my final point here is also to remind people that as bad as we have it, and I'm not saying that we should feel sorry for any other group, we do have to recognize that there are poor white people too. So that means, in other words, all of the money generated by white wealth and white corporations and the 92% of the national wealth that white people hold does not mean that even then white people will all be taken care of. What it means is a handful, an increasingly decreasing number of people, or the 1%, will have more and more and more and more. And really, it's the top 0.1% of this country, the 400 families or so in this country and around the world, 400 families in this country and a similar small slice of the population around the world, they have everything. So this idea that because they have everything that somehow we can access the rest that they have left for us and, again, overturn our inequality is pure mythology. And then again, finally, we are not poor because we don't know how to save and we don't know how to invest. In fact, all the studies that continue to come out show that just as the myth against Black fathers isn't real, that Black men are more likely than white men to stay and take care of their family and other people's kids, Black families are more likely to save their money than white families. The problem is Black people don't have any money. So this idea that, again, if we just buy Black and bank Black and we stop buying rims and hair and fronts and whatever else we're said to be spending our money on, that we'll be rich and successful is pure mythology. What we need is a political and social movement. We need a revolution that's going to institutionalize a redistribution of the wealth that we all help produce. That's the only way we're going to get over any of this. A capitalist economy, things in range as they are, will never produce anything better for us or anybody else.
Brother Richard.
Yeah, I appreciate your work, Dr. Ball, and I have to say it was for me it was listening to you on Yvette Carnell's podcast that helped me become aware that you really worked this piece. And what I hear you saying is that we have to look at it from the point of the propagandizing to a population, the understanding how capitalism is structured, and then how we are being manipulated by that propaganda piece. So I'm asking, have you traced back this whole, well, I'm working on this here now of doing a tour around these African Americans in the World War I, and it became interesting to me to find out this Committee for Public Information, which was to persuade the whole nation to do something that they didn't want to do. Are you saying that what this whole thing around buying the Black buying power is kind of the same kind of propaganda mechanism that was used during World War I to make people think something that isn't?
Well, absolutely, and it's part of understanding where we are now would really mean to go back and understand some of the history you're talking about. This country from day one, from the day that Paul Revere changed in his printing press the picture of Crispus Attucks from a Black man to a white man so that he could use the fact of Attucks' killing to inspire white people to rebel against the British, from the time where Sam Adams and other people memorialized by beer commercials were using the metaphor, as Patricia Bradley wrote about brilliantly years ago, of slavery only to talk about white relationships to British and not the enslavement that white people were forcing upon us. This country has been involved in massive propaganda. The communication studies industry, the schooling, the journalism schools were founded on relationships by the economic and political elite, specifically to create a media environment that would be more sophisticated and effective than any the world has ever seen in creating a public consciousness. So this is just one small part of it, and that's why I've tried to, over the last couple of years, try to reframe how I approach this and make it more about an issue of propaganda. I mean, one, I'm not an economist, so all of this for me was initially trying to look at the economic reports I was reading and seeing how they did not at all support this claim that I was hearing by well-meaning people and all kinds of activists and radical spaces about us having this buying power. And then if we go back, we've been hearing it again. Malcolm X talked about it. Dr. King talked about it. Amos Wilson talked about it. Claude Anderson still talks about it. And these are brilliant, popular people within the African community who I'm just saying have, in this one issue, made a drastic error in interpreting the situation and in understanding what that phrase of purchasing power or spending power or buying power actually means. And as an issue of propaganda, as I said a moment ago, when you see that all of these references, all of these references come back to that one Selig Center for Economic Growth report, whose own methodology to come up with this conclusion of buying power is in their own words, has nothing to do with what money black people actually have. It has only to do with what money we do have access to and where we have permission to spend it. And we don't have access to money and the permission to spend that money in areas and avenues that will collectively improve our economic position. And that's the fatal flaw here. But people keep seeing that number, and then we get a lot of, you know, again, well-meaning people, some hustlers, I believe there's some people doing this on purpose, some hustlers, but mostly are well-meaning people who go before our communities and audiences and they regurgitate this number because they see it reported all over the place without any context, without any depth, without any reference to the original reports. And they say, "Wow, we have a trillion dollars. We have a greater GDP than you know most countries in the world. Why are we poor? Well, we're poor because we choose to spend our money ignorantly." And then they go on black radio, they go on black churches and audiences, and they say that line, and we hear that in the audience, and everybody starts applauding, and they're like, "Wow, that sounds really deep. You're really smart. We just aren't, you know, we're poor because you know it of our own failure." And then I think, and I'll stop here again, I think one of the things that we end up doing is because, understandably, once confronted with the reality of our situation and what we need to do to get out of it, we don't really want to do that. So it's much easier to say, we don't need a revolutionary movement that where I have to work with other people. All I have to do is buy black and save my money and, you know, and I will improve my condition. And if other people do the same thing, all of our situations will be improved. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong.
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, and as you have developed this, you know, one thing that I, and hopefully carrying on this line of thought and discussion is that I was going through the history of black business in America by Dr. Juliet Walker. And out of that, I came up on a, you know, piece that I didn't even know exists, talking about Johnson Magazine and the piece that he developed, you know, the owner of Ebony and Jet, The Secret of Selling the Negro Market. And when I heard you develop it, it sounded like the same thing because it seemed that the business community at that time, and this is the 50s, right, 1950s. So I'm going to ask you as a question. Had you seen that piece, and does that fall into your paradigm around the propagandizing in relationship to tapping into a consumer market?
No, I haven't seen that particular piece, but I've seen many similar. And then even just recently, and I don't know if you've all had him on yet, but I would encourage you to interview Paul Porter about his new book, Blackout, and his 40 years in the music business, because he quotes Bob Johnson as saying at a BET employees meeting, in response to employees saying that they weren't being paid enough, he said, he's quoted in Porter's book as saying, I didn't create BET for you and for the black community. I created BET for me. So if you and my family, so if you want more money, you need to look at BET as a stepping stone in your career. And if you want more money, go work somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And similarly, in BET's own literature, they'll tell you the white media mogul from England, John C. Malone, put up the $500,000 initial seed money for BET to Bob Johnson's $15,000. Now, what that should tell you immediately is that regardless of whatever we've ever heard about black ownership, and this is also something you get from Paul Porter's book as well, is that it doesn't matter what the gender or race of ownership is if the economy and the institutionalized relationship between, in this case, media or any business in the state doesn't change. So if you have a capitalist economy, it doesn't matter if you have – you could put Malcolm X in charge of a major corporation. You could put one of us in charge of a major corporation. There's nothing we would be able to do to change that institution into something that was a revolutionary one. This was Malcolm's point about a chicken cannot lay a duck egg. It doesn't matter who you plug into the system. The system will do what it does. And when you have black ownership, when black people start to walk out of line, the investors walk away, the advertisers walk away, and that black ownership would crumble, you know, beneath its own weight, or the board would replace the CEO, et cetera, et cetera, and so on. So my point in all that is that, and by the way, if you read Earl O'Fari's classic book, The Myth of Black Capitalism, he does what I understand you were talking about in the piece you were reading, that he traces the history of black business and shows that one of the crises that we face is that even if the black business owners are well-meaning, and that's not always the case, having a black owner of a capitalist enterprise, it only means that one more black person is going to make some money. That doesn't help the rest of us. But even if they were well-meaning, there just isn't enough money in black America to be redistributed in a way that's going to make all of us whole. We don't have enough of the pie. We can't support businesses, black businesses, because we don't have enough money. Black businesses can't expand to serve the needs of what is now a $40 million black nation, because black businesses don't have access to capital expanding wealth. So again, we are in a formerly enslaved neo-colonial relationship. This is not something that can be overturned by individual or collective behavior, unless we're talking about that collective behavior manifesting as a political and social movement that wants to create institutionally the redistributive net mechanisms that we need to make sure that no matter who makes money, no matter what businesses get picked up, no matter what we as a community decide we're going to engage in, everybody benefits. That's the only way it's going to work.
And does that raise the point that we have to be, and I hate this word, but it's the only word that comes to mind right now, sophisticated in relationship to being able to decode this propaganda as it comes, because now the whole media exposure is 24/7 in all different types of venues is more pronounced. And you gave examples with Disney and other companies that are utilizing them. So do we have to be able to know how to look at it to say it's trying to move us somewhere? We have to be able to be more aware of how to do that.
I mean, absolutely. The more media literate we are, the more organized we are, the better everything will be. You know, but as an exercise in struggle, you know, it works with everything. The only way you really understand how a structure works is if you try to change it. Most people, and this is not, I'm not condemning anybody, but most of us, regardless of our background, we're not raised or encouraged or trained to try to change the structures that impact our life. We're trained to accept those structures and to accept them as being legitimate and worthy of being there. So like with everything, we are not trained in how to have civil rights struggles and black power movements and revolutionary taking over of power. We don't have that training in the same way we don't have training in media literacy. So just using, again, this buying power as an example, my 10-year now effort to try to mess up or interrupt this conversation has really, you know, on the one hand been frustrating, but on the other hand really been instructive. It is very difficult to penetrate popularly disseminated, commercially sponsored messages. So when I've been invited in the few cases that, you know, so when you present the data and the numbers and the reports and you encourage people to read the studies themselves and understand how these numbers are developed, most people don't do that, and their response is to respond to the popularly carried messages, which are, again, well, we just don't spend our money wisely. Well, no, we just don't have any money. And then finally, people will say, I just had a friendly debate with a very good friend of mine the other day, and it wasn't about the accuracy of my research. It was about the delivery. And what I'm often told is it's a depressing, a position to take. It depresses people, and they feel like it's a defeatist, position to hold, and people don't want to hear it. And I'm saying, well, I really don't know exactly what to say to that. All I can really say is if I'm supposed to be doing my duty as a scholar who cares about his community, then I've done my duty, and I have done the research, and I think proven the myth of black buying power in general. I think I've already proven it. I think there's some more work to be done, obviously, but I've already think I've proven it. But because people don't hear the full story, or invitations are few and far between to popular media spaces to have this conversation, and because even my attempts to reach specifically to some very prominent names in our community who is ostensibly are out here trying to do good work for us, but are continuously repeating this myth, I can't get it. I can't get anywhere with it. It is very difficult to get anywhere with it. And in part because it's just constantly regurgitated. I have a Google alert for buying power, and I get, you know, about 20 to 25 emails every day just talking about buying power and all its different manifestations, not just about black people. And but I just see all over the country and all over the world, almost on a daily basis, there's a version of this myth that misleads people. And the few times I've been invited to mainstream commercial national media to discuss it, as people can see in at our mixwhatilike.org, where I house the work I've done on it, people can see how mainstream media have routinely distorted, even after interviewing me, even after, you know, claiming to involve me in the reporting, have distorted what I've said, have distorted the story. I mean, it's crazy, man. So it's an exercise in propaganda, in power. It's an exercise in media. It's an exercise in economics, and it's an exercise in struggle.
We're in conversation this evening with author, lecturer, professor of media and Africana studies at Morgan State University, Dr. Jarrett Ball. And you can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a couple callers on hold. We're going to get to them in a sec. Dr. Ball, one other, let me mention this and then get to a couple calls and Brother Richard get back in. The myth of black buying power, as you state, kind of puts our people's focus on one another being the problem as far as our spending habits. When you state, and rightly so, that European capitalism is the real problem, which was started basically on the backs of black people here on the continent, in the continent and here in the United States. So when we have, and you just gave an example, and I want to expand on that example you gave. When you have a Bob Johnson make a statement like he did in reference to BET, and when you have a similar statement made by the actress Monique, when she talked about Oprah and Tyler Perry not paying actresses and actors what they should be getting, especially if they were nominated for a quote-unquote Academy Award, when she confronted him about the base salary of what she should get and with the other actress' name escapes me. She was in the, you know, the movie Richard, the one about the three women that was mathematicians.
Now I can't think of it. It just left my mind.
Yeah, well,
scientists.
Yeah. There's no problem. When it was mentioned to
Taraji P. Henson.
Yes. She used herself and Taraji P. Henson in confronting Tyler Perry and Oprah about what black actors should be getting, especially ones that was nominated or won an Academy Award. And his response to him was, well, I'm not paying you that, but you're making more than what you'd be normally making. So when you have blacks practicing this European-style capitalism on their own people, does that, quote-unquote, make them more of an enemy to our people than the system of white supremacy and European capitalism?
I don't know about more. I just think we have
to. Or part of the problem, put it that way.
Well, I mean, they're definitely part of the problem. I mean, this is why, you know, I know we always have this ongoing struggle over race and class in our communities, but this is where even after we get our national issues together, we have to have a very class-based conversation.
Okay.
Because, again, a lot of people have been pimping black nationalism to become the sort of that neo-colonial petty bourgeois black colonial elite. You know, it was the same thing that years ago when Mary Baraka and Dr. Clark and Daruba Bin-Wahad called out Spike Lee about Malcolm X. And one of the arguments they made was that he ran that same story to get control of the movie. Oh, it has to be a black director taking over a black movie about black people, blah, blah, blah. And then they all conspired with Time Warner, to, as Warner said at the time, to brand Malcolm X as you would The Simpsons and Batman. So absolutely. I mean, it also look. It goes. It's all connected. It's the same thing where you know, Jay-Z you know, follows that same line that logic he ran years ago about that updated on this latest album, that how can I help the poor if I'm one of them, and you know, I have to get rich and then I can help my community and so on and so forth. And in the media, it's the same thing that people will say. Well, when Tyler Perry and Oprah get over, then they'll start producing the movies about Assad. I had a debate with a very prominent, I guess he's a millennial, you know, celebrity figure. And his argument was the same thing. He was telling me, oh, we can't be mad at Tyler Perry because when Tyler finishes, you know, getting him to power, you know, maybe he will create the movie about Assad Shakur. This is exactly what the brother told me, and I'm like, this is a fundamental error that we continue to make. That we assume that we can, and really what it does is it's just people use that so they can justify going out here and making money, doing whatever they have to do, and then they can claim that they're doing it because in some great distant future they're going to help us as a collective, and it's just nonsense. In part because, as I started before, we individuals don't change institutions. Institutions change individuals. They produce individuals. That's why it's an institution. So this idea, you know, I make the point about myself. It doesn't matter my politics. I do not change the institution of Morgan State University, the simple fact that I work there. And I would be a fool to think that I did, no more than I changed the mission of the United States Navy when I served in the military 25 years ago. It's absurd to think that any of us has been any more than we thought Obama or someone else. I didn't, but others thought Obama was going to become president and fix things for us. I mean, this is the error that we continue to make. And then economically, with buying power supporting it, we do the same thing, and it allows us to say that it's not a system created to hold us down and prop up a tiny minority. It's that because that means we have to have a conflict. We have to have real work and struggle to change that. No, it's easier to just say, no, we're poor because I bought a car before I bought a house, or I bought, you know, rims and fronts and I got my new hair, which is just absolutely patently absurd. And yes, we could all do better with our money. Yes, we could. Maybe we should save more. Yes. And when we can, let's buy from a black, you know, business and go to a black bank and do all of that. Do all of that. I'm not discouraging any of that. Let's boycott. I'm down with anything. I'm about ready to boycott the NFL, you know, over Kaepernick. I'm ready with everything. But that is not going to fix anything on a material level, and especially for the collective. All of those initial steps have to be followed up with massive political organization and movement building if we want real change. And that's the unfortunate reality.
Richard, let me grab this call, and then I'll go bounce back to you. Let's go to 602, area code 602.
Yes, brother Elliot and brother Richard and Dr. Ball. Good evening. This is Marcus calling from Memphis.
How are you, Marcus?
I'm doing all right. You know, I got a few questions for the doctor. So, doctor, you would consider then, like, the Black Wall Street of Tulsa and, like, the Marcus Garvey movement, you would consider that a failure then, doctor, right? If we were to listen to your principles there that you expounded a while ago, we would consider that a failure in looking back?
Oh, absolutely not. See, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that any of those efforts were wrong, and I'm not saying that any of the people engaged in those efforts were to blame for anything that has gone wrong with our communities. What I am saying is that even if Wall Street, Black Wall Street, and Tulsa and Garvey's movement had not been vigorously assaulted and attacked as they were, they would have not succeeded in economically overturning the inequality that we suffer. In part because, again, black people don't, even as big an organization as Garvey had provided, black people do not have enough money, even when pooled in a great effort like that, to challenge and collectively overturn our position. What Garvey's real threat, as I understand the history, Garvey's biggest threat was not that he was economically overturning capitalism, but he was providing an important unity and political direction that if that were followed, would have created the problem. So it was, you know, so Tulsa and Rosewood and all these other examples being attacked by local white communities, they were right to be afraid of positive black unity for a variety of reasons. From their perspective, they should have been afraid. But Tulsa, Oklahoma, we have to remember what was happening even there. It was creating in one small community a handful, relatively speaking, of black men mostly, and some women who had a bulk of the money, made, you know, the community work a little bit better, but it was not going to be able to expand to the point where it was going to, for all black people, even in that community, totally overturn the poverty that they were facing. And that's, so I don't want to be seen as, I'm not saying all these people are wrong and failures. I'm saying I don't think enough then or now has been done to understand the full ramifications of where we were economically, which is, again, why I continue to point back to that 1969 classic by Earl O'Fari, or Earl Hutchinson at the time, The Myth of Black Capitalism. He really goes through all of these numbers and shows that ultimately what ends up happening is, with black business and black economics and all of that, we get a handful of black people that make some money. But the community itself doesn't have enough to produce enough to redistribute wealth to enough of the black community to change anything fundamentally.
Okay. All right. I got another question for you.
Sure.
Okay. So do you think then, if the communists or the socialists were to take over in America today, so do you think that would erase racism in this society, if the communist white man or socialist white man was to have a revolution in America today? Do you think that would improve the condition of black people in America?
Well, so no, I don't want to be mistaken as saying that a simple takeover of white-dominated communism or socialism is going to solve anything. I would say that as a step, well, we'd have, first of all, if the United States were a socialist economy, an actual socialist economy, white people would still be white supremacists. Black people would still find many avenues in which we suffer. But many of the basic material concerns we face would be addressed. So, you know, I don't want to be confused. This is why, again, we can't forget. And I don't want, you know, I don't want to fall into this whole thing, this mythological thing about the Eurocentricity of communism and socialism, and leave out all of that history where African people have engaged in terms of the contemporary economic situation we find ourselves in, what they called Kwame Ture, Amilcar Cabral, Du Bois, et cetera, as scientific socialism. And all that simply means is once we take over and once we have our community, a black community, black nations, whatever you want to call it, once we have that part taken care of, we then have to figure out a way to deal with the class question and make sure that we don't have poor people. Now, I'm not an expert in Garvey, but the one critical area that I am concerned, this is not, I'm not jumping on the Du Bois, you know, thing either, but I'm just saying, Garvey did say he wanted Christianity, he wanted capitalism, he wanted black Rockefellers and black Rothschilds. Now, I think at a certain point, at a certain stage of revolution, we would have to have a conversation about all of those things. Because I don't want a black Rockefeller. I don't want a black Rothschild. I want a black community that doesn't have to worry about poverty, that doesn't have to worry about incarceration and homelessness and joblessness. That's what I want. Anyway, so I hope that helps with at least where I'm standing with this.
Okay, well, I got one more question, and then I'm going to hang up and listen. You know, racial economic cooperation seems to be working for all other ethnic groups. You know, it's working for the Chinese, it's working for the East Indians, it's working for everybody else. So why isn't it working for us? And I'll hang up and listen to your comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
So first of all, I appreciate the questions and the call. Simply put, I don't think it's safe to say, I don't think we should look at it as that all these other communities are doing well and are more successful than us. We have to remember the specifics of each situation. First of all, in China, in India, all throughout Asia, there is crazy economic inequality and poverty. Even here, the people we say that come here and somehow do well with their racial economic collectivism, they're doing well as very small segments of their own community here in the United States who have taken advantage of a racial hierarchy that has looked to work against us and provide a few of them with some benefit. And then the real point we forget is that they work tremendously hard, tremendous long hours. They don't make that much money. A lot of the money that they're making, they're sending back to even poorer people in their home countries so that those people can survive. I often make the joke, but it's really not a joke. We're always talking about the Asians, you know, Asians own these stores. The Asians own the corner store across the street from my house. But the point is, every time I go over there, they're always in there. They're always in there working. They're always in there 24/7, day and night. The same three people are always working and taking money and sending it back to their. So in other words, they're not doing as well as I think a lot of us are encouraged to think that they're doing. And whatever they're getting after tremendous amounts of work. And, you know, one small component that you know, don't have that much time to get into this part of my argument is that none of us should be working as hard as all of us are for what little we get. We should be working less and less and less and enjoying more and more and more. So that's why I don't like to make those comparisons to these other communities because, you know, of the points I just made, and it creates a false standard against which we compare ourselves. And that's not the standard I want. The standard I want is we already produce enough so everybody on the planet can chill. That's where I want us to start thinking. if we're not spending all this money on the military, if we're not spending all this money on rich people and their tax breaks, if we're not, you know, creating situations where five white men can own more land in the United States than all of us combined, if we don't have a situation where four white men in the United States have more wealth than half of the country combined, if we redistribute from that, then none of us are working that hard, and none of us have to worry about comparing ourselves to other communities that are killing themselves to send a few dollars back to their own people.
Dr. Ball, I know the time is of the essence. Do you have time to take a few more calls?
Let's go another. I don't know. I can probably push another 20 minutes.
Good. Let's get some calls on, Richard. Let's go to 404 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, my name Wes, man. I'm called A Doc, man. I was born in Athens, Georgia, man. When you talk about the Bank of America in Athens, Georgia, man. Well, look here, man. My question is you, man. You ever heard of a term called susu? You ever heard of that?
I don't think so, no.
Most like Caribbean, I know some. I grew up in Florida. Most like Haitian, Jamaican, and some Koreans, what they do, they get in a family, right? Everybody put their money in the pool, right?
Right.
Like
okay,
month,
yeah.
2 months a year, and then one person get the money, and then they start all over again. And so
right.
I tried to get my family to do that just for us, man. My immediate family. Here they go. Oh, what happened? Who going to keep the money? La, la, la. That's our problem, man. Okay, if we've been so brainwashed, not even trust each other, man. Okay, if we start, each little family start a little susu, and I think we can get somewhere, man. You see what I'm saying? And I let somebody else talk, man. What you think about that, bro?
I hear you. I didn't recognize the name you used, but I know, in fact, I have, you know, I know quite well. I have intimate experience with something like this. The idea is great, and I hear you that we have to get over some things psychologically or whatever to so we can work and trust with one another. But again, that's not why those things don't work. Those plans don't work primarily because you don't have that many people with enough money to even sharing what little they have generate enough that's going to create that much wealth. So what you end up with, you might end up with $1,000, a couple thousand dollars. And that's great, but we're talking about a situation where we need to be developing wealth that generates money that makes money without people having to work, and that generates a situation where you can expand what you have in ways that will help the collective. Going back to my initial point about buying power, that plan doesn't work because we just don't have any money. We don't have money.
All right. I appreciate it, Dr. Elliott. I yield my time to the people, man. I know Dr. Paul. Okay. I'll holler at y'all.
Thanks, Wes. Let's go.
In fact, Ken, before you go to the next caller, there's one thing that I like to throw out on Dr. Ball. And, you know, two things. And I agree wholeheartedly what you're saying. But two things come to mind, and that's with Bobby Wright, you know, in dealing with us creating a social theory. And I hear you're saying that we have to have some framework of our understanding when we're dealing with state capitalism and our relationship to it. And the other thing is that I remember reading Oliver Cox, Caste, Class, and Race in relationship to our position within the capitalist structure, or at least his analysis when he evaluated those different type of economic orders, our position in this structure could be. So it's a question of not just, as you're saying, the spending power, but what is our structural relationship with each other? Because at that point, then I like Shamir Amin, because he said there's unequal development. Also, there has to be a delinking. And the question is, do we structurally have infrastructure to even delink from the capitalist structure that we're in, even if we were going to use race as the basis? So so that's why I thought that you're being able to project the propaganda and keeping us in a consumer behavioral interrelation with capitalism is so important for us to understand, because it helps us move to that nationalist, that structuralist, that question of, do we have our own independent operational and political economic entity to say enough is enough, we can do this on our own. And I guess that's considered sovereignty. So that's just,
you raised a lot of really good points, and I don't know that, yeah, I don't even know what I could add to that.
It was just a reaction.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's right. I mean, it's a struggle. This is why I'm drawn to this, what people are calling Afro-pessimism. I mean, we have to, I think part of what we have to do is, you know, you mentioned Bobby Wright, is develop sort of a stronger psychological defense system to help us deal more accurately with what's going on here. It is a struggle just to confront intellectually what is happening here.
You know,
I think it is very difficult for me included. I'm not any better or different than anybody else. It's difficult for me to look into the face of this problem and really see what I think is the situation and what's necessary. And you know, it's hard to say, man. You mean I can't just boycott the NFL and get Kaepernick a job and make things better for us? Like, it's more than that. It's going to be a lot of work, man. Now, we should do all of that. I'm just saying, it's going to be a lot more than that.
You know,
there's a lot to get to.
That's why it's necessary that we utilize any tool we have, these airwaves, to have black think tanks. That's my pet peeve. And all of these areas where we dwell, whether they're urban, suburban, anywhere we are, we need think tanks where our people are discussing these issues and coming up with some solutions, because the solutions is out there. And some of the blueprints are already here. You know, but we see that a lot of our so-called black media is used, just like you said, Dr. Ball, for propaganda. Every day you hear laughing and joking, or when serious discussion should be had, you have a Tom Joyner, a Steve Harvey, with all types of satires, and Amos and Andy laughing and joking 6 days a week. That's part of the problem. Let's go to.
But just real quick, you know as well as I do. I mean, think if you had gone through all the hard work of organizing, working with a group of people to collectively enslave another group of people and genocidally remove another group of people, and then drag some of your own people over here into penal camps and labor camps and kill them too when they try to organize. If you go through all of that work, are you really going to set up a situation where all of this can be overturned if people just stop, you know? Or are they really going to turn the airwaves over to black voices who are going to nationally raise these kinds? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And to their credit, I don't blame them. If I were running this thing, I would have Steve Harvey on all day, every day.
Stop.
Let me grab caller. What's your name? Where you calling from? Caller, are you there? They might have stepped away. Let me go to another call here. Let's go to New York City. Caller.
Yeah, what's happening, brother Richard, Elliot, and Jared? Listen, you know, the thing is, brother Jared, one of the biggest problems that the black community has is we have no community. So whenever you put forward the narrative of us doing certain things, we're not able to do it because we can't collectively come together and have the necessary spaces and places to do these things. Now, unfortunately, we're more interested in the little white boy and the little white girl's community and being part of their community than we are and ever trying to build our own community. And, you know, I just don't understand it, because I'm in Harlem now, and at one point in time, Harlem was a community that you could say, well, blacks own 30-40% of the businesses, but now in Harlem, you'd be lucky, honestly, if black people own 5 to 10% of the businesses in this community. Now, who do you blame for it? I personally blame the politicians and the pork chop chicken eating preachers, because those are the ones who have basically sold us out for the trinkets, you know, and everybody wants to talk about how great of a man Charlie Rangel was. Charlie Rangel's a piece of, you know what, if the truth be told, and all of the others that were there with him. You see what I'm saying? So when we take into consideration where our position is, we have to start with totally changing the mindset of our people and figuring out how we could collectively come together and understand that we as a people, African people, are our priority. Because if we don't, within the next 40 to 50 years, there's going to be no more, as I say, authentic African-Americans. It's going to be nothing but a bunch of crazy, filthy mulattoes. But we don't want to deal with this. Because we're supposed to get along, because this is what our so-called leaders preach: integration, the madness, the nightmare of the 20th century for black folks. So,
there's a question, Jay?
Yeah, I'd like to know what is his opinion on what I said.
Okay.
I think, you know, even as whatever he said, disgusting or whatever, mulatto myself, I other than that, I largely agree with what he said, that whatever my, you know, personal background may be, integration hasn't been good for black people. But one point I actually think I would have to remind him, you know, when he talks about Harlem, is to his point about understanding our situation here. We have to remember Harlem was itself named after a Dutch community and was created initially for an elite white community. Harlem became black because of the necessity from a white supremacist standpoint of moving African people around, as is the case wherever we end up. So it's no different than when European powers carved up Africa and drew lines around existing communities and between existing communities and created new communities. When Harlem can be white and then be made black and now be made white again, when down the road from me in Southeast D.C., the same thing could be done there. Georgetown in Northwest D.C. used to be for the enslaved African community, and now it's for the elite white community, and it could go back to another. I mean, it could all change whenever they needed to. And it speaks to the powerlessness and the tenuous relationship we have with this state and with white people in general. That
yeah,
whenever
but,
that yeah, go ahead. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Is all I'm saying. But
No. I'm a brother, Jared. I listen to your radio program. I know I didn't. You know, I want to say this so we could clarify. I didn't mean to offend you as being a mulatto. You one of those mulattoes who understand that the African is dominant. You understand what I'm saying? You got a lot of mulattoes who are going to take up the white side. That's what mulattoes I'm talking about. Because as you remember, 1 ounce of black blood make you black. But what I'm trying to say is, how and what can we do to inform our people of the narrative that you just spoke about, that we have to find a place that is ours, settle down, close up shop, and build that place like every other community do. In New York City, and you could probably do it in Washington or whatever, there's always another ethnic group that has control of their community and their neighborhood. For some reason, it's only us as a people who don't have that. I don't know no place in America where black people have total control of a community where they are able to service themselves and don't have white folks as the servicer. And that's the issue that we got to figure out. How do we change the narrative that the Jacksons, the Sharpins, the Preachers, and the rest of them are pushing us into? Because everything that they're doing is becoming hyper-based on us becoming more inclusive with white people than it is not to separate, but to make us as African people a priority. If you notice, we ain't even talking about ourselves no more as being Africans. You see what I'm saying? But nobody's picking up on it. You know what I mean? It's just like when Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and them left us, it seems like the only person that I know of right now, and there may be others, that's really doing the work as far as putting us in the African mindset is Marwanu Baruti. That's the only one. I can't think of nobody else right now off with my head that's really putting forward that type of paradigm to put us in a situation to where as we could reclaim our African self, close forces, and trying to survive. Because brother and sisters out here, this thing ain't getting no better. If anything, it's about to get way worse.
You're right about that.
My
short answer, unfortunately, is I don't know, man. I don't know what, I don't know exactly what to do. I fully agree that we have to continue to support media like this. We have to continue to find ways to better organize among people that we already agree with and expand from there. But I really don't know what to do. I mean, I have been, and that was sort of the point I was making a little while ago.
I leave you with this last thing? Is there any way that you, with your circles that you roll in, because I think one of the last programs I listened to you on your radio podcast or whatever was what you had with Dr. Stacey Patton. Is there any way that you could bring together the so-called black intellectuals in some type of conference away from them pork chop chicken eating preachers and the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the rest of them clowns, and maybe they could come together and put something in a think tank forum to where as we could maybe guide those who really would like to be Africans, you know? And I'll leave you with that, and thank you, and have a good day. Hold that.
Thank you, Jeff.
I appreciate all of that, and look, there's we're all constantly trying to do small things along the lines that he was just talking about. But part of my point, and I just as real as I can from my own limited experience, is that, you know, we all, academics, so-called pundits and intellectuals and activists, all, you know, everybody, all of us suffer from the same kind of struggle. So there's a lot of issues with getting ourselves together, with getting our own cliques and circles organized. Like, and then beyond that, the point I was just going to make is that even when we do, to magnify that message and disseminate that message today is harder than ever. Despite all the media and the internet and great shows like the one we're on now, it's hard to penetrate a very popular and well-organized media machine to get these ideas out there. So that's why I was saying, you know, I don't know exactly what to do. And it's an exercise. I'm engaged in a new exercise now over that struggle, in terms of I have been working on this particular issue for 10 years. And I think, again, that I've proven buying power is a myth. But penetrating this imposed environment is very difficult. I've been involved in a couple of efforts along the lines that the brother was just saying, and it's very difficult to magnify that message in any kind of real meaningful way. But I do agree that it's particularly his final point there, that it can get worse. Like, we shouldn't think that things are going to get any better.
You know, during a live broadcast, I was in conversation with Sister Pam Africa, And she told me on the air that, in her opinion, that black people are afraid of revolution. Now, I know what she was talking about when she was talking about revolution, because it goes into a lot of different areas. You talked earlier about the problem is not us spending necessarily, but the European capitalism, the white supremacist system that we're under. And it's necessary for us to overturn this type of inequality. But in order to do that, it will take some type of revolution, political, cultural for black people, and it might be physical. So these things are going to be necessary. We see it in history. It's all through history where this is necessary. I think it stands to reason. And that's why we need these think tanks. We need these type of discussions, because being prepared for all of those things is going to be necessary. Your opinion, Dr. Ball, before we start winding things down.
Well, I agree. Look, I mean, this is Black August, and I'm a big, I'm deeply inspired by George Jackson. And he was very clear, and I think he was correct, that we need three things. We need an underground army. I'm scared of that. I admit that. That's a terrifying concept for me. It doesn't mean that it's wrong.
Okay.
Or that it shouldn't be considered. He then said we need an alternative political party that would popularize even the idea of revolution. And then we need our own press, our own media system. Because he was correct, and he understood revolution as well as anyone, that we have to be able to create a popular consciousness among our own communities that revolution is necessary. And then we have to develop the mechanisms that will bring that about. And none of that currently exists. I mean, we don't have a political party. I'm not getting into the army thing. I'm scared of all of that. I'm not doing that. And that's part of the point. I'm guilty as everybody else of being afraid of what would ultimately be, unfortunately, at least necessary. But we have to have, a press. We have to be able to communicate, conversate, ideas like this to say, look, we have major problems. And the one thing, you mentioned earlier, the one fatal flaw, I think, politically of our dear sister Yvette Carnell is her lack of Pan-African consciousness. that's a major, the brilliant service she provides as a host of her TV, of her YouTube channel, is, I think, damaged by her real, limitations on that Pan-African. So when the brother's talking about we don't see ourselves as African, Jim Brown just did the same thing Smokey Robinson did a couple of years ago, and Yvette kind of does, in her work, that whole thing of I'm an American,
I know
this country, I'm not politically raised that way. So I think that's another kind of level of struggle we have to get into. If for no other reason, she misses the point, like many of our folks miss the point, that it's not just the idea that we have to think, because I know a lot of people struggle with this concept that we're African. We don't want to be seen as associated with African. But politically, even if you don't want to accept it as a personal cultural identity, politically, to walk away from that, abuses the history that everyone, even when they didn't agree, understood. Garvey and Du Bois didn't agree on much of anything, but both of them were clear that the only thing that's going to help black people in the United States is being linked up with Africans around the world. Now, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter if our own personal moment, we're like, man, I don't really feel that African. I'm not really that connected. I'm not going to be doing all this. I'm not trying to really go back to Nigeria or whatever. That's fine. Keep that to yourself, and that's fine. But politically, to publicly disassociate from the Pan-African struggle is a mistake.
I think, Brother Bull, it gets into that we haven't conceptualized that we operate as a governing governing people, conceptually as individuals. Therefore, and realize that we have the potential, we have the necessity of a big tank, a big tent decision-making body, where we have various, I'm gonna call them nations, right? So whether it's Pan-African or American or Hebrew Israelite or Christian. I mean, these are historical themes and realities that are part of what Europeans dominated, regardless of what we believe. And we have to sit at the table together and decide, debate, and negotiate how we're going to resolve to get this monster off our back and still benefit each other individually. That's the big tent. Well, if we think that everybody's going to follow us or there's nobody, then this guy stays in charge. And I think that's where we are as we move towards the 22nd century, in the point of that we have to, everybody has to acknowledge your history still comes out of the same thing of domination and oppression. So you, just because you identify differently don't mean that this guy is going to stop oppressing you.
That's right.
Look, Dr. Ball, listen, I don't want to hold you because you went over time. But before you leave us, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just going to wrap up by saying this. First of all, thank you for having me, and thanks for doing this and providing this platform, and thanks to your audience all around the world for tuning in. People can find, I encourage people to check this work at imixwhatilike.org. They can, you know, get at me there and see for themselves the amount of work I put into this and what they think about it. But yeah, we have, oh man, so much.
We got you started.
Well, it's just that there's so much of what you all touched on tonight is so thoroughly important. And I love these conversations. I deeply appreciate you all for including me in this one. This is, we got a lot of work to do. And your last point there is exactly right. It really doesn't, you know, when I think of Dr. Clark, this is the point I wanted to finish on. When I think of when Dr. Clark used to say that African people lack the essential selfishness of survival, and I know he meant that collectively African people are just too nice to others, and that's the double-edged sword that ends up hurting the community. But I sometimes like to think of it a little bit differently, and to think that on a personal, individual level, the selfishness of survival that we need to have and adopt as individuals is one where we understand that selfishly it's better and more safe for me and my family if I know that you and your family is safe and has everything that you need. So if we can even just think of it that, and we don't want to say that's selfish, but it is selfish to say that. Like, I want you all to have what you all need because that makes it more likely that you all will get along with me and that you won't be coming to try to steal from me and we don't have to fight for whatever we think we need. So we just think of it that way. And again, you know, we don't have to get to all the deep, perfect links that sometimes hurt us pan-Africanly, if I can use that phrase, and just say, look, man, I need you to eat well so that we can eat well and vice versa. And then let's move on that basis. And then maybe that'll, you know. But other than that, man, thank you very much.
Hey, Dr. Ball, listen.
To you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to reach out to you. Listen, I'm going to reach out to you in the very near future to kind of be a regular participant on Time for Awakening. It's been a while. The last time you was on was over a year. But, Dr. Ball, before you leave, Paul Porter, the title of that book again.
Paul Porter's book is Blackout.
Good.
My 40 years in the music industry. And, T.I. and his brother Teodros just did an event in D.C. the other day that folks can look for on C-SPAN in the next couple of days, talking about his book. But if you think of what we've been talking about in terms of, you know, sort of broad macroeconomics and society, and think of it narrowed down to a music context, he basically, through music, carries the conversation that we're all having right now. Through the music industry. It's real deep and fascinating. A great book. So, I encourage you to check it out, have him on your show, all that stuff.
Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you all very much. Peace, everybody.
Talk to you soon.
Peace, man.
We'll be right back after a brief word, we'll continue the conversation. And you can get involved too at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a couple calls still on hold, so we'll get right to them after the break.
are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
You all are really to be admired, and I want you to know that you have my moral support. I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to be coming back to see you, and we are going to be demanding, when we go to Washington, that something be done, and done immediately, about these conditions. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank author, lecturer, and professor of media and African studies at Morgan State University, Dr. Jared Ball, for being with us to talk about the myth of black buying power. And, you know, Richard, the way he explains it, I can clearly see what he's talking about, because that's not the problem. And you, a lot of our people realize that, but you find some that say, to kind of parrot that, that if we just change our buying habits, that that's the issue, the whole issue in itself, that we spend too much money on frivolous stuff, which not saying that black people don't. We, I don't think we spend any differently than other people to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But that's not the whole crux of the problem we face. It's multifaceted. We need a multi-pronged approach in economics, and us buying from one another is part of it. It's a part of it. But you can find that, listen, I can start a company and have all black people coming to me buying. But if I don't change my mindset and start developing a more Pan-African or Afrocentric or however you want to term it, attitude towards my own people, then I'll just become what you see out of here when he gave that example of a Bob Johnson or some of these others that have been making millions and close to billions of dollars, but the situation don't seem to change for black people in general, and their attitudes don't seem to change towards their own people. It's a lot of lip service, but you don't see anything changing in the dynamics of what's going on. So, you know,
it's an understanding that this is a structural issue that we're dealing with.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a political, economic, and military reality that we have to confront individually at this point, because we are so individualized on one hand, and then make the move. But you have to have, as you say, you have to have the right mindset. You have to have the right mind. And I don't care what your orientation of your mind, but you have to have the right mind. You cannot look at something that is putrefied and said that is beautiful. You just, I mean, they gave us the European metaphor, mirror on the wall. You know, I don't know if anybody remember that, but the babe was ugly, right? But she looked in that mirror and she said she was beautiful. So this is the structural reality. We can't, some of us accept it and we move on. But in relation, and you know, and that's what I hear Brother Jay say, in overall, others is looking at them, looking in that mirror and saying how wonderful it is. But how can you be wonderful when your main role is about exploiting and destroying the everything and everybody that you come in contact with? And the system of capitalism is that. And we came in on the bottom of it as a part of its creation. And, you know, it's by design. And you can't just put a new dress on it.
Let's, got a couple callers here. Let's go to 215. 215, area code 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How, Brother Richard? How you doing, good brother?
Good. All right, now. How you feeling?
I'm doing fine. I'll praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, I was waiting to talk to Professor Barb. Y'all couldn't get to me. I know he was short on time. I wanted to speak to the brother. And I want to thank you and Brother Richard, brother, for having him on. The brother was a breath of fresh air, man. I mean, his brother was very in tune. And what I like about Dr. Barb, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, was that he says, look, I don't know everything. I don't know the answers to this thing. You know, this thing is so big, you know. And that gets to go back, Brother Elliot, what you said about how we need black think tanks. Because, see, I like you, Brother Elliot. That's why I listen to y'all's show every Friday, every Sunday, because we, like you said, Elliot and Brother Richard, we need black think tanks, because I'll be the first to tell you. I was talking to Brother Ralph earlier today. I don't claim to have the answers on everything, man. I have answers on very little things. I'm novice trying to learn, too. I don't pump my chest out over Brother Joe know everything. I'm learning, too. So that's why I listen to Time from the Awakening, because people need to be woke up out of this mirage we are in. So if anything I can learn off from y'all's show, coming from you, Brother Richard, and you, Brother Elliot, and your guests like Dr. Ball, and all the other guests, Brother OC, and any other guests y'all have on, I'm here to learn, Dr. Kling, and anybody, because I want answers. And I appreciate the humbleness of Dr. Ball to say, look, I just don't know this thing, the answer to this thing, man. But he's willing to learn. And you have an open mind, that means you can soak like a sponge, Ellen Rich. You can soak up and be able to learn. When you're arrogant and you think you had the answers to everything, then that's what stymies a lot of our people. Some of our people get a little knowledge, and maybe think they're the king of everything. But the fact that you're willing to learn and humble enough to admit that you don't know all the answers to everything, that's right. This shows you that you have the potential to make a great contribution to the progress of our people, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, sir.
You know, so, but anyway, but anyway, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, you know, one of the things I was going to say to Dr. Barr, had I had a chance to talk to him, was I was very disturbed by his comments that he was talking about Oprah and Tyler Perry, because it's so ironic that Dr. Barr mentioned them, because a brother on the terrestrial radio show here in Philadelphia was mentioning Oprah and Tyler Perry about their foolishness and how they treat black people. And I'm glad Dr. Barr raised that and stuff, because I was going to say this to Dr. Barr. I don't want to. Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, I didn't fight so hard and so long to get rid of a white devil oppressor, the replacement for black one, and whether they go for Oprah Winfrey or Tyler Perry. I'm not going to sit being happy with some Negro treating our people, underpaying them, and giving them the short thrift like these devils do. We're not going for it. We shouldn't stand for that. And like Dr. Ball said, and I concur with him, we see too many of our people, Elliot and Richard, they always want to give black people a break. They like he said, he talked to black people telling him, well, Professor Ball, give Oprah and Tyler a break. You know, once they get older, they're going to make moves by a shot of the core. In other words, a light bulb will go off in their head, and they're going to get it together, and they're going to do that. That's crock, because Brother Richard, right here in Philadelphia, on the old WHAT station, that with our late great brother, Brother Esau, Brother Johnny Sapp, with the sports show. I remember for years when that Uncle Tom Negro that's in the Supreme Court now, you know what I'm talking about, that House Negro, by the name of the initial C. You had black people calling that station. I remember like it was yesterday, saying they would attack me and Brother Rob and other like-minded, because we knew what Clarence Thomas was about. Oh, y'all need to get off Clarence Thomas' back. You know, give him a chance. He's a black man. He going to get it together. He going to be okay. Well, almost 30-something years later, whatever, that nigga was worse than he ever been. So this nonsense about some of these people, they go all of a sudden, a epiphany going to go off in their head, and they're going to get it together. And so that's the mistake so many of us make. Stuff. If we don't hold Tyler Perry and challenge them now and getting them niggas' ass right now, they ain't going to get together 20 years from now when they 60, 70-something years old. They ain't going to get, they're going to be Negroes at 70, 80, like they are Negroes now in a lot of cases. Because here you got Oprah Winfrey to show you the madness of this sister. And I know some of our people, they think Oprah's a sacred cow. You don't supposed to say anything about her. And I'm not saying that the sister hasn't did some good things here or there. I mean, you can point to a lot of you Negroes and point out a good thing they did here or there. They still don't make up all the negative stuff they do. Now, here's Oprah Winfrey in the city of Chicago, L.A. Mitch, I'm going to like let this marinate on your brain for a minute. Here's this sister in Chicago. She in the same city with Minister Louis Farrakhan and Reverend Jeremiah Wright. When she was over there on ABC, and even now that she got her own show, she has never had none of these brothers on her show. Think about what I'm saying, Ellen Richard, and I hope Brother Jay in Chicago is listening. I mean, Brother X in Chicago is listening. She has never had none of these brothers on her show, and they right there in Chicago with her. But yet, she never had David Duke on her show. She done had that old racist cracker, Mark Furman, from the O.J. trial. She done had the Klan on her show. And I remember these shows, they was on this show calling black people niggas, every despicable name in the book. And they're saying all kind of derogatory things. She couldn't have them. She could have the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan or Jeremiah Wright on her show. But she can have these racist, no-good crackers on that show trashing black people all over the place. You understand what I'm saying? This is the kind of stuff we cannot allow. We got to hold her accountable for that, Elliot and Richard. You understand what I'm saying? She need to be caught out on the carpet for that. You know, that's inexcusable and it's disgraceful, you know. And same with Tyler Perry. If he going to sit there and tell that sister that I'm not going to pay you this and that Negro, we need to boycott that Negro and let that Negro know. We appreciate you giving black people jobs and your movies and all that's well and good, but don't think you're going to be like the white Jewish or white devil movie producers or whatever out in Hollywood, the Jews or the whites, whatever you want to call them, and do the same thing to our people that we fighting for. We fighting against the white or the Jewish producers out there for underpaying our star actors and actresses, but damn, we're gonna take it off you, Tyler. Nah, brother, you don't step up to the plate and do right, we'll boycott your damn movie. See, we gotta stop playing games with these Negroes, man. We gotta hold them accountable, man. We gotta let them know we will not watch the damn movie. You can come out with 20 Madeas. We won't see a damn one if you don't start treating these black people right and with dignity and respect. If you don't start paying them the top dollar, like you would pay a white actor or a white actress, then damn it, you can make all the Madeas you want, and they be right in the movies collecting dust. You know, when we got to play hardball with these people, man, whether it's Oprah Winfrey or Tyler Perry, any other ones that got that kind of mindset. Playtime is over, brothers and stuff. Playtime is over, man. You know, yeah, we've got to hold these people accountable, man.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joe.
You know, ain't no denying this is over with, man. You know, I get so sick about people with that stuff, man. We always want to give these Negroes a benefit. Right here, and I close these last couple of comments so somebody else can get on LA Mitchell. Like here in Philadelphia, same with the jailbird district attorney right now. I heard that same argument, him. You know, Brother Joe, give Seth Williams a chance. He's a brother. You know, he going to get it together, please. Six or seven years to a second term, the Negro in jail now, headed for a 5-year prison sentence now. That Negro over the years let every white cop brutalize black people. The case that I know right there, he was a Negro, was that case out in West Philadelphia where that old cracker cop shot himself. He was playing with a gun. He's probably drunk and stuff. Cracker playing with a gun, shot himself. And so I'm being like a man and say, look, I made a mistake. I was playing with my firearm and the discharge. I shot myself. He going to go say some mysterious black man did it. You remember, Elliot? And we ain't never heard the true story. Now, you know, darn well, a white cop accusing a young black man of shooting him. You can imagine the brothers that was physically arrested and beat up. Somebody we never know how their Bruce Stone brothers took for something they didn't even do and stuff, man. And Seth Williams, instead of prosecuting this cracker, he said, I refuse to bring charges because he voluntarily decided to resign from the police department. No, damn it, you the district attorney. Prosecute that cracker for what he did. He caused a lot of black men to suffer undue physical abuse and stuff for his lies. Don't sit there and come with that crap about because he's resigning from the police department. I'm not going to file charges. See, that should have been a wake-up call. This stuff wasn't no damn good, but you still had Negroes. Give him a chance. He gonna get together. I mean, what do these Negroes have to do for some of our people to wake up and realize they ain't going to never do nothing? Like Jay was talking about Charlie Rangel and stuff. And I agree with Jay on that. Charlie Rangel is about as useless as a wet rag. He's a disgrace and stuff. Who could ever forget that time when Brother Chavez, the late great Hugo Chavez, came here from Venezuela and a great president from Iran, the former president, Ahmadinejad, when he came over here for that UN thing a few years ago. And when Hugo Chavez spoke at the black church, he said the devil spoke here, was here a few minutes ago. That devil, where they're talking about George Bush and Charlie Rangel, get up there. You're talking about my president, my president. I said, you punk-ass Negro. Here, old racist cracker like George Bush, a racist devil. You up to tell me something. You know, you don't like the fact that a foreign leader come in and assault my president. I mean, I see you handkerchief head Negro. You shut up, man. So Jay is absolutely right about Charles, man. He's about as useless as a wet rag, man. We got representing us on the city, state, federal level. You got the straight handful of, you got the Dow Clarks of the world. He can sit up there and don't open up his mouth when black men getting shot by the police. Don't open his damn mouth, but he can run around it with Pat Toomey and stuff, you know, trying to pass laws that can further hurt black people, but he can't speak out into them brothers, into Asa Khalif and the brothers from Black Lives Matter jumping this behind. He wouldn't answer any statement about black men getting killed by these devils and stuff, man. So we got a lot of work to do, Ellen Rich, and we got to start holding these Negroes accountable and stuff like that. And last point on John Brown, like I said, I am so disappointed in this brother, man, with this American stuff. Like Brother Mo said on Terrestrial Radio today, like Mo said, if Jim gonna sit there and take that position about he's an American first, well, that means you accept all the stuff that America has done and still doing. You accept Trayvon Martin, Jim. You accept Sandra Bland. You accept the four little girls getting blown away in the church. You accept Emmett Till and the crackers getting acquitted for murdering Emmett Till. You accept all that stuff from you in America. It's just so sad to see brothers like him and like Brother Jason, Hakeem Abudi, now all of a sudden, because you get older now and a white man has threw some trickers your way, all of a sudden, like Jay said, Haki, the white man is no longer our perpetual enemy. Well, you can say that, Brother Haki. He may not be your enemy no more. He's going to damn sure be mine. He's going to be mine to our leader's earth. Did Gregory transition about a week or so ago. Up until the day Dick Gregory made transition, Dick Gregory made it clear who was his enemy. The white man was his enemy. Like he said he blamed white folks when he woke up in the morning and had to pass gas. He says white folks' fault. You know what I mean? So Dick Gregory, he was clear who his enemy was. So Hakeem might get comfortable now. He's a grandfather, and he's getting a little check from the government, whatever he's getting now, and he's going to be comfortable now. I'm like, Brother Jay, he might not be your enemy, Hakeem, but he damn sure is mine and stuff. And I'm sure I spoke for Baba Dick Gregory. He was Brother Baba Dick Gregory's enemy up until the end. So I get so sick of these brothers. They get a little older, and all of a sudden the white man is, they're American now, and the white man is no longer the enemy. Well, speak for yourself, Jim. Speak for yourself, Hakeem Mahmoudi. Don't speak for Brother Joe. Don't speak for Brother Elliot. Don't speak for Brother Richard or Brother Jay. Speak for your damn self. And I just thank y'all brothers for the time.
Joe, thank you for your call, man.
You're welcome, Brother Elliot.
Richard, wait a minute. I think we got a call back. Caller? 602?
Yes, brother. Yes, brother. It's Brother Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus. Mm-hmm.
I had to call back. Yeah, I really had to call back. You know, there are three types of people in the world, you know. I saw this sign years ago. It said people who make things happen, people who watch things happen, and people who wonder what happened. Now, your guest, you know, he said that it's ironic that he said that he did not know the solution, but he said that under a system of socialism or communism that we would fare better as black people. How he know that? Okay? Next comment. He said that other ethnic groups operating under racial economic cooperation was not faring as well as how we think. How he know that too? He ain't Chinese. He.
Hello. Oh boy. Marcus, call back. We lost your call. Give us a call right back. Richard, you know, while we waiting on Marcus to give us a call back, you know, when Joe mentioned about the comments that Dr. Ball made, when he said he don't have all the answers. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we got him back. Are you there, Marcus?
Yes, you hearing me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, so, as I said, you know, he ain't Oriental, he ain't Chinese, you know what I'm saying? So he can't speak for them people. We got to speak for ourselves, you know? So, you know, as I said, you know, Garvey said, he said, look, give the black people wealth, it will give them power. And last statement, look, if we are ever going to be great again as black people, we ain't going to be here in America, okay? We've never been great in America. It is going to be in Africa where we were great in the past. See, it ain't going to be here, you know what I'm saying? So that's all I got to say. We take care. Thank you.
Okay, Mark. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, man.
You know, what I like in the conversation tonight is that he admitted that he don't have all the answers, which, right. I mean, you know, we know that. But he did say that in reference to what Brother Marcus said, that the strategy of Pan-Africanism that was employed by Garvey and others is our only salvation now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listen, we know that just an economic strategy to move our people forward is not all that it entails. We need a total mindset revamping. Almost in all of our behaviors, we have vestiges of European mentality. And you can see it played out, especially if you know what to look for. You can see it played out in some of our behaviors. Those are the things that need to be talked about. That's why it's the need for think tanks in all of these cities. And utilize these churches for think tanks instead of hollering and screaming and jumping up and down on Sunday. And I'm not just saying churches. Any of these religious organizations, whatever day they meet, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, start using these things. It's high time. We've been past time. It's time for these things to be discussed on a serious basis. Richard, I don't know how to say it any more necessary. I'm not trying, like I said, I'm not trying to bash anybody's belief. But I'm saying that while you got a captive audience, see, a lot of the, we have people coming on here all the time. And the brother said a couple of weeks ago that a lot of the meetings that he has in Washington, it's always an older crowd.
Right.
But the only place now that we have a semblance of all multi-generational presence there is our religious places, the places where we meet at to pray and to fellowship. You have older, you have middle age, you have babies, and you have adolescents. They're all there. What better place to talk about some of these issues? And I ain't saying they got to devote the whole time to it, because I know that they want to do other things, ceremonial things. But devote some time, an hour, whatever, to discussing these issues, bringing them up. Bring them up in front of the children. Let them hear these things being discussed. Some of these children feel as though the older generation didn't fail them, if you talk to some of the young people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk about these issues. My parents never talked about this. I hear it. These things need to be discussed. You know, another thing that Dr. Paul was honest about, when I asked him about the comment that Sister Pam Africa made to me, right, about black people being afraid of revolution. And all of these things, we know what revolution entails. Whether it's a revolution to the mind, he talked about revolution politically and the military part of it. That's a part of it. And he admitted that he was afraid of that. Because you don't know where it's going to go. But listen, that's part of it. We can see historically that was part of it for our people. We talked about Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey a couple weeks ago, and how some of their images should be up in these churches instead of white Christ with his legs crossed hanging on the cross. These things need to be talked about. This man wasn't afraid of armed conflict. When he knew that he wanted to be free from his brothers over there in England, he knew it was coming, but he tried to prepare for it. So those are the conversations we need. Because you can see that any group that was talking about rallying black folks, any group, whether it was the Panthers or others, and a lot of these groups was peaceful. They never attacked. In fact, all of those groups of people, they never aggressively attacked no Europeans, but they were attacked. They were attacked. Talking about a lot of the groups. None of these groups aggressively attacked Europeans. Now, some of them defended themselves. You can see it clearly. But none of these groups attack Europeans. So we do see that when you're talking about rallying our people to do for themselves, that this man comes against you, period. And sometimes he uses people that look like you to help him do it. That's another thing that needs to be talked about. These traitors among our people, it has to be talked about. It has to be brought up for discussion. Because it's happening, man. This is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an article, and I'm going to put it up on Time for Awakening page. Here's this Herman Cain. You remember him when he ran for president before. Did you see what he said?
If what you call him is Uncle Tom?
He's demanding that. Let me read just a portion of this. Former Republican presidential candidate decided to show support for Dr. Ben Carson after Carson's hometown newspaper, the Michigan Chronicle, said that he was in the lead to win the House Negro of the Year Award.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Herman Cain was offended by the title and took to media to get a few things off his chest. This was his comments. Since the Michigan Chronicle, a historically black Detroit based newspaper, thinks that Dr. Ben Carson is a House Negro, then I must be one also. That's a revelation, Cain wrote, because that's one of the names you get. It's one of the names you get called by other black people when you're a success at something. Wait a minute, I'm losing my place here. Oh, when you do not buy into the black group think tank or act as they say that they want you, or say things that they want you to say. So what I'm saying is House Negroes should stand up. Cain then takes the defense for Ben Carson by saying the soft-spoken doctor won't brag about how he has become the world-class surgeon, but he did so by believing, but he didn't do so by believing he was a victim. Well, in essence, I'm not going to read all this stuff that he, messages that he put out, but he's saying that House Negroes ought to stand up. He's one of them, and he's proud of it. So some of these people know exactly what they're doing. They ain't confused about what side they're on. That's part of the discussion, Richard. It needs to be discussed.
Yes, and we don't need to be trying to save them either. Wasting that energy when we can be able, we can be reorganizing and you know, creating the type of infrastructure that we need in order to save ourselves. Because I'm convinced that that this is those people who have already bought into this, and I understand the mindset, but right now we know the challenges. Dr. Ball, raised the point of this whole propaganda. I mean, if we don't be watchful, we can get all caught up in thinking one thing instead of another, because this system goes, it's perfected trying to tap into our mind, So I understand what you're saying, Brother Elliot. I understand wholeheartedly.
Let me grab this call because I see the call back. Hey, brother.
Hey, Elliot. Jay, right quick. You left out one good thing that the brother did say. He understood as a mulatto that he was an African. Now, if more of them would understand that, maybe we would have less problems as far as moving forward as a people.
Well, you know what, Jay, and I'm glad that you mentioned that because, well, we're getting a little in the background in the fence. I'm glad you mentioned that because we talked about this before, me and you, on the air, that you can't paint all of our people with that type of brush. Because a lot of our people, and you can see a lot of our people historically is not like that. They can't help how they came here, but they can help the mindset that they develop once they're here. So you find some of our people that might have had somebody else as a parent, they don't think like that. And he's one of them. Hello, you still there?
The beauty of being able to identify. That's why I said to him, I didn't mean no offense by it. Because as long as you're a mulatto and you understand in my book that you are African and that you are on our side and that you're going to fight on our side, then hey, I have no problem at all if you may decide you got to off that light side. That's not an issue with me. Because in every war, there has to be casualties. Mao is a perfect example, and look at where China is now. And to think about it, that wasn't too long ago that they were able to do the necessary thing to move their nation forward to whereas now they're basically, if truth be told, the true superpower of the world. I mean, they're more powerful than us in the U.S., and they're more powerful than Russia, if the truth be told. And they just sit back and they play their position and they deal with the business at hand. But if you notice, they go around the world and they set up shop. And what do? They incorporate themselves into other cultures and they start getting the women pregnant. And then they start bringing their people over. And before you know it, their culture in a lot of ways is the dominant culture. That's what's going on in Africa that nobody wants to deal with or nobody wants to address now. But see, we can't talk these honest talks because we romanticize about our position too much. The Chinese are over in Africa making power moves. The moves that America never done because of what? The simple fact they too greedy. They don't know how to, in a sense, share or give a person more than a penny. You know, here it is, the Chinese are over there giving you a nickel. So the African, because of their position, feels much better about getting a nickel instead of a penny, even though they're still being shortchanged.
I had to interject this too, Brother Jay. China, they had to put a restriction on their population growth. China got a billion people.
But think about it, Richard. They put a restriction on their population over in China,
right?
And then what did they go through? Spread around the world,
right? I'm agreeing with your point. It's that the comparison between them and the Caucasian as a quote unquote racial or a phenotype group. They're talking about they can't even repopulate, and two, they already a minority. And if they go and where they
are, the white man.
Huh?
That's not the behavior of the white man. The white man wants to de-escalate the population of the planet.
Right.
They into death. Most of the other people are not into death the way that the white man is. The white man loves death. He breeds off of death. He's a death culture. He's not a live functioning culture. Oh, he's a beast. There's nothing in the world like the white man. You can't name me one place on this planet where people of color have been living amongst themselves in harmony, and the white man has came within their midst and total havoc having occurred. There's not a damn place on the planet. You can't name me one place on the planet where it's happened.
Oh, you, well, you preaching to the choir. Listen.
If you tell that to the average Negro peen, he'll work as hard as hell to think of a place. And will come up with some bogus place and try to make excuses for, because you know why? I did it to Armstrong Williams on the radio years ago. I asked Armstrong, because you know he loves the white man more than the white man love himself. I asked him to tell me one place on this planet where the white man has gone, where people of color have been living amongst themselves in peace, and the white man hasn't came there and lived amongst them and over a period of time hasn't caused havoc. He couldn't name one place. He tried as hard as hell to name a place, but he couldn't name a place. And that's the reality that our people do not understand. Just like your brother from Philly was saying earlier, nobody no longer wants to accept the fact or want to even think about the fact or put it into context that the white man is your perpetual enemy. I've lived by that statement for the last 30, 40 years. And let me tell you something. It hasn't changed. They haven't done nothing in the last 30 years to make me pull off of that position. Once you understand that position, the person that wrote it, Hakeem Madhubuti, don't even believe it no more. Now that tells you the power of the white man. He wrote it. He woke me up with that statement. It was in the book, From Plants to Planet. It was one of the first books that I wrote. I read.
You wrote?
And when one of the first books I read.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Maybe his third book that he wrote. And when I read that quote right there, it blew my mind.
Well, Jay, listen.
It blew my mind. And I've been ever since. And no one, no white man, no black man has ever been able to take that position from me. They can't argue how it's not true, because it's all I've seen in my 50-some years on the planet, that the white man has been the enemy of any and everyone on this planet. And I'll leave you with this. How could we, over the last 15 years, as a people, go from despising homosexuality to now accepting homosexuality and on the verge of accepting pedophilia and bestiality.
No, it's the same media.
If we don't understand the wickedness and the deviousness of the white man,
you gotta be
something serious, bro.
And the utilization of that media propaganda, too.
Huh?
And the utilization of that media propaganda also.
Yeah, but you gotta be a serious, serious creature. You gotta be really a devious, low down, dirty human being. And you have to know how to control the mind of a people to ever get them to accept that type of immoral behavior and to be willing and able to go along with it, to whereas now that behavior is becoming dominant within your culture and it's acceptable. Do you understand how sick that is? And you know something, our people don't understand how sick that is. That's what's so
funny. No, I ain't gonna say that we don't. It's a lot of our people that know that's sick.
You think we don't understand it, Elliot?
No, I didn't say that we don't understand it. I said there's a lot of people that don't accept that. A lot of our people don't accept that behavior.
The majority of our people accept it, and who did it to us? Who got us to accept it? Those pork chop, chicken eating pimp preachers.
Well, wait a minute, Jay. Wait, hold it. We're going to take a brief break, and then when we come back, we're going to start winding things down. But I got to let you go. You know why? Jay.
Because I was talking about the Reverend.
No, that ain't why. Because you got to get an early start. What are you laughing at?
Oh, yeah. Listen, Elliot.
You got to get an early start, Jay.
I heard you. Hey, listen, Elliot. I heard you Friday when you said it, and I started cracking up. I said, Elliot, no, he ain't right there, Courtney, with them fools.
You gotta get an early start. I don't want you to miss the bus.
Hey, listen, but you know what's so crazy about that is? That these old fools are going to go there, walk, hurt their back, and hurt their feet, spend all their money in the neighborhood, and in return, get nothing. And then I'm waiting. I hope they all get down on their knees and start praying to white Jesus. And I really would like to see if 1,000 of them get together. And my only question is, what is being accomplished by doing it? What is it? Could you tell me what's being accomplished by going to the daddy, asking the daddy to stop whipping my behind because Jesus don't want you to, and in the process, he ain't going to give you nothing. And going to an immoral devil, asking the Satan himself, because that's what Trump is Satan. You know, that's Joe Apollo. Him pardoning Joe Apollo, didn't that just tell you that he don't give a F about what you think and what anybody else thinks? That he's letting you know that white nationalism is in effect?
Well, listen, on Friday's program, Jay, I want you to call and give us a description of what happened.
Why don't you do a special presentation on Wednesday and come in for an hour, and maybe somebody will come and do a recap. And better yet, since you want to talk a little trash, Elliot, why don't you see if you can get one of those pork chop chicken eater preachers to come in on Friday night and allow us to beat up on him after he comes on and justify that BS. Because, you know, I just want to call him up and ask him, what did you get out of this, you pork chop chicken eater? And no, but last thing, let me leave you with the last thing. You think they're going to pass the plate? Is the plate going to be passed?
Well, now, listen, it's a bunch of ministers, so they ain't going to pass a plate between one another.
Why not?
I don't think. I don't know.
No, they're gonna have some of the sheep there to port the minister, because who they gotta have the sheep there to hold that pork chop chicken eater up, because you know he got trouble walking all those blocks. You know who's gonna sing the spiritual song? Even though I must say so, The pastor that pastored my grandmother's church was one of the finest Negro singing preachers I ever heard in my life. But I leave you, and I got to go. I just wish that one of my favorite pork chop chicken eaters would be there, the Reverend Maddie. Do you know who Reverend Maddie is?
Yeah.
Have you heard of Reverend Maddie? Isn't he one of the finest preachers that the good white Jesus has given to us? And listen, Elliot, I've been to his church. I've watched the show because I live like four blocks away from his church. And it's one of the finest entertaining spectacles you could ever go in front of. If I could record it, I would record it and put it on YouTube for the simple fact that it's a hell of a comedy trip.
Yeah,
the
well, man, he got plenty of recordings on YouTube.
No, brother. He's better in person.
Okay.
A service on Sunday. He's gifted.
All right.
He's gifted in BS. Jay, have a good night, brother.
Talk to you later.
Be good, Richard. All right.
We'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective. If you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost. If you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com. Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right? Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
That make you want to holler and throw up both your hands. Listen, I want to thank our guest this evening, author, lecturer, professor of media and African studies, Morgan State University. Dr. Jared Ball joined us for the first hour and a half of the program. And if you want to catch the segment that Dr. Ball was in, you can always go to timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com and catch the podcast. It'll be up, I guess, a little while after the program. You'll be able to go to the website, pull it down, or go to Black Talk Radio Network and do the same thing from that location. Let's go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We got a new host coming on. He's listening to the program tonight, and a lot of the listeners are looking forward to your program. Brother Oshie, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing, Brother Ellis? How are you? Hey, Brother Richard, how are you?
All right, now, how you feeling, dude?
Yeah, yeah, a lot of the listeners are looking forward to you coming on. I guess you can announce the date, you know, so while listeners are here, some of them are here, and they can kind of mark their calendars.
Yeah, well, I have a equipment problem, so I'm going to be a little bit delayed, but the other two programs on the Motherland Media Network will be on: Dr. William Rogers' program, Black Reality Think Tank, on Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And
then they give that date too, Brother Oshie.
Okay, yeah, that's going to be the 7th.
Okay, 7th of September.
Thursday the 7th for Us Lifting Us, and then Saturday the 9th of September. Us Lifting Us is on Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative. That was one of the questions I would like to have asked Dr. Ball. I'm going to tell you, man, you're having a great show, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Outstanding show. Outstanding program.
Yeah, well, listen, we're looking for African perspectives because we're looking forward to your program. And the listening audience is going to love it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And then the other program that will be on is Dr. William Rogers' program, Black Reality Think Tank. And that's Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
And that'll be starting on tonight.
We're all excited about being a part of, you know, Time for an Awakening Radio, as well as BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. And we're looking forward to, you know, getting that information out there, disseminating that information.
Brother Oshie, you know, the Us Lifting Us and Dr. Rogers will be starting in early September, and you'll be following right behind them. So, listening audience.
Right behind them. I'm hoping it's going to be September 11th, but it will be September 13th. Regardless, I will have it together by then. Hopefully, because I can say that the equipment is on back order, and so that's going to delay things for a minute. But it's going to be cool. We're going to have a great time disseminating information here on Time for an Awakening.
No problem. I'm looking forward to you being on. And I think you're winding up your program on the other network that you're on. So, and you'll be on tomorrow. So you can let our listening audience know where you'll be at. They can listen to you on there until you move over to here.
Yeah, and I hope you can join me tomorrow, brother.
I got an appointment early, but I'm going to try to get on there maybe for the last hour. I don't know. Richard might be situated.
I appreciate it. Because it is going to be my last live broadcast on the Motherland Media Network until we make this move. The next two sessions will be a tape recorded. So, I'm looking forward to it. We're every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And you can listen by dialing 319-527-6202, 319-527-6202. And listen, if you want to enjoy and join the conversation, press 1, and let's chop it up for the last live broadcast. There's so much to be discussed, believe me. There's so much stuff, just like Ball presented a lot of good information. And I agree, we all don't. No one knows it all.
Right.
None of us. But as long as we have the understanding that we are an African people, And there's nothing we can do here. We're spinning our wheels here. If Oprah and Kane and all these folks want to stay, let them. know?
That's my position.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Because it is time for us. It's been time for us to close ranks, pull our resources, and do for ourselves. And I'm just not talking about us here in America. But just like the doctor said, I mean, it ain't about money. This is a messed up system.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a system built on inequality. And the persons who have done it, you expect him to give you some justice? You expect him to give you righteousness? No. It hasn't happened. It's not happening now, and it ain't going to happen. And that's just the reality. But it's hard for us to face that because the other piece he mentioned was fear. We do. We have a fear. We've seen what this Caucasian has done. We know what he has done. But yet we don't understand the unity that if we would have could overcome that and we could move forward as a people. Everybody's just worried about themselves. You know, that's the problem, though, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We live in America. America's about four things: individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And so the ones who subscribe to that, whether they be Caucasian or whether they even be us, go in that mode. It's all about me. I've got mine. That's why the Negroes can't do nothing. That's why we can't do nothing. Because those in a position to do something, they're scared. They're just worried about their situation. They don't want to lose, you know, whatever they have.
Yeah, or a position they think they have.
Jeopardize that.
Yeah.
No. Professional athlete. I ain't just talking about, you know, Colin Kaepernick's situation. I've been four square against it months ago because of the whole idea of just these Caucasians, you know, just Caucasian supremacy, you know, privilege. Here it is so damn obvious he's being white-balled. So damn obvious. Yeah, we're just going to sit back, you know, scared as hell, and let the brother sink. Now, I was happy about what happened with going to the NFL. Really, it's all symbolism without substance. All of it is. And so that's why it's important that those of us who espouse a Pan-African philosophy, ideology, methodology come together and put this information out there. It is the only salvation for our people. I believe in our scholars, our historians, our ancestors, our elders, those men and women who understood how important it is for us to release the damn vice grip this cracker got on our mind. We can think clearly, some clarity, to have some love, some respect, and the willingness to work with one another to get us out of here. Yet we see, you know, we're so damn bamboozled by these folks. We hold our hope. We still believe that some way, somehow, these crackers are going to have an epiphany and respect our manhood, our peoplehood, and then allow us to freely be a part of their society. One thing in your conversation with Dr. Ball, even the poorest cracker don't want to redistribution of wealth. And it would take over 230-something years if the Caucasians' wages were frozen and ours were increased to incrementally. It would take 230 years before we would have equitable economics, whether it is pay or wealth, accumulated wealth. Over 233 years. Oh, you know, we're dealing with, just as the brother said, we're dealing with the most evil entity on this planet.
Yeah, and it has to be dismantled.
Well, the only way that it can be, only way that we can dismantle is changing our minds, how we respond
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
You know, we accept their definition. That's the only way that we can handle it, just as the doctor said again, when he talked about the military option. He's afraid of that. Well, hell yeah. Because really, we can't challenge crackers militarily.
You say, now with this mind.
The serious weaponry that he has, all the gadgets, everything that he thinks about is there's a war implication or war application. No, we know that, I mean, it's clear. Damn the conspiracy that he's created stuff and done stuff clandestinely. So, I mean, it's there. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Damn it, y'all. Please, brothers and sisters, look at this history. Why do you think and hold and hope and pray and wish that it would change for us? It will never. And so, you know, don't hoop and holler about a Negro here or there who has some wealth or some position, who has done this, that, or other. Hell, we so damn sick. We celebrating Negro First here in 2017. I saw somebody say, he's the first. I was like, you got to be kidding. In 2017, we still talking about somebody the first. Nate Duff.
Well, the struggle continues. Brother Oshie, I'm going to let you go because we're going to wind things down.
All right. I appreciate it. I look forward to tomorrow. And, of course, I look forward to being on the part of the time for an awakening family in years to come. That's for sure. Peace to you, my brother. Peace, Brother Richard.
Peace now.
Talk to you soon. Richard, we coming up on the end of another program. And, you know, that's a part of what we've been talking about the past 2-3 months when I was, you know, let the listening audience know that the expansion of things that we're doing here, 3 new programs coming on in September, possibly a 4th. I know a new program is going to be added in October. So Time for Awakening is expanding, and we're going to expand the listening audience, a lot of different programs. And it's a part of what we're doing, man. The struggle continues. And I want to thank the listening audience for participating in the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the